From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. In a few minutes, what should consumers, patients, make of today's report on Medicare spending?
But first, let's get to the details of what exactly that report says. It is the first look at Medicare payments to doctors in more than 30 years, and it says about 4,000 doctors and medical providers were paid $1 million or more by Medicare in 2012. That is well above the median payment per doctor, which was just over $30,000. And it means that 2% of medical professionals got more than a quarter of the Medicare payment money. Shannon Pettypiece is a healthcare reporter for Bloomberg, and she joins us now from New York to talk about all this. Shannon, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we mentioned a few of the headlines there, but tell us more about what exactly is in this data.
So, yeah, and just to be clear what this data is, these are basically a compilation of every payment made to Medicare to doctors for inpatient office visits. This doesn't include anything being done in the hospital, but it's every single payment Medicare made to doctors. So you can imagine this is an enormous amount of data. It actually was crashing our computers around here when we first started trying to open this file. And I think one of the key things, as you mentioned, we can take away from this is that a large percentage of the amount of money that Medicare spends, and of course, this is taxpayer money, is being put into the hands of a small percentage of doctors. And why that is going to raise, it's going to be a question we're going to want to explore. There could be a very valid reason for that. There could be that, you know, there's some doctors that just see a lot more seniors than other patients who are doing expensive procedures that, you know, have a high overhead that are using, you know, very costly drugs and devices. But it could be that there's some waste and fraud going into the system. And now that we have this data, that's what we're going to need to look into and find out going forward is, these doctors who are the big cost centers of Medicare. Why is that? And is that for a valid reason? Or is there some waste that can be cut out of the system there?
Well, yeah. And we see that one Florida ophthalmologist was paid $21 million in 2012. Do we know more about exactly who these doctors are that were making so much money?
Well, in some of these cases of the doctors, you know, when we've looked into it, we found that the doctors who were getting these extraordinarily high payments in 2012 have actually been, over the past year, investigated by Medicare for possibly overbilling or overcharging program. However, there are some doctors who are high on the list of Medicare payment recipients who are there for what seems to be valid reasons. For example, we talked to a couple pathologists who are actually the third and fourth highest paid doctors in the Medicare program. And they said, listen, that's because my name is used to bill Medicare for a large group practice. So they're not the one getting that big check. They're just the one whose name is being put on the bill. And then that money is distributed amongst other doctors in the practice. So there's going to be cases like that, too. And there's also going to be cases where, you know, you have a doctor who's, you know, who is sort of renowned for doing a very expensive, high cost procedure. And he has the best outcomes and everyone is sending their patients to him. And yeah, he is going to be getting more from Medicare, but it's for a perfectly valid reason, not because of some sort of fraudulent activity.
There's also geographical data here looking at which states get the most of these Medicare payments to doctors, and California and Florida are at the top.
Yeah. And now Florida, I guess, shouldn't be a surprise, because we have the stereotype of a lot of seniors going down to Florida to retire. And California and Texas and New York were also up there. Again, I think that probably has to do a lot with being larger states as well.
Now, Shannon, the American Medical Association went to court to keep this data private. As I said, this is the first time we've had a look at this in more than 30 years. What were the objections to releasing it and how were they overcome?
Well, they raise concerns about doctors' privacy, for one, but the AMA is also warning that this information could be misinterpreted. If you go on the CMS website now, which manages all this data, and you look through the spreadsheet and find your doctor, you know, you may see your doctor is making a lot more than the average cardiologist in Medicare or is doing a lot more stent procedures than another physician. Well, there may be a very valid explanation for that. They may specialize in doing stents, or, you know, they may be seen a lot more seniors than other doctors, and that's why they're charging more. And the AMA is worried that doctors' reputations and careers are going to be compromised by this, by someone seeing an abnormality and assuming that that's because of some sort of waste or fraudulent activity, when there could be a perfectly good explanation for that. But on the flip side of this, this information hasn't been made public before, and there already have been cases of fraud and misuse that have been found by other reporters, who've previously been able to use this information for research, and that's also going to help sort of tease out some waste in the system. There are good guys and bad guys out there, and I think this data is going to start to shine a light on that.
Well, and it'll be interesting also to see what Medicare has been doing with all this data, because while it hasn't been public, they've been able to see it. Shannon Pettypiece, healthcare reporter for Bloomberg, joining us from New York. Shannon, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, we just heard a lot about what we shouldn't do with this information. The data, as we heard, is just raw numbers about payments. We shouldn't make too much of it. But what should patients do? A Dartmouth study in 2011 found that more than 40% of American primary care doctors think that patients ask for too much medical care. 25% said they give them too much medical care. Don Taylor is associate professor of public policy at Duke University. And Don, you say this data will help researchers figure out where spending is, but at the same time, you agree, don't make too much of doctors with huge payments who might be outliers. So take away those. Won't this data reaffirm a fear that a doctor may be calling for an X-ray or an MRI just to build up his or her fees?
I have pretty strong doubts this will have much of a consumer impact at all, to be honest. I mean, I think in aggregate, perhaps it will reaffirm that we overspend, which in one sense has to be the case, given how much we spend and the fact that our outcomes aren't better. But I suspect the story will be a lot like Congress. Everybody hates Congress but loves their congressman and keeps sending him or her back to office. I think, physician-patient relationships are personal ones. So I actually have pretty strong doubts that consumers will have much chance to make good use of this data.
Well, in other words, you're saying that it's more likely the consumers will think it's someone else who's spending too much on medical care, not them.
Exactly. I mean, for example, my grandmother is 90 years old, and I've helped her, along with my mother, who's also a Medicare beneficiary, make some health care decisions. There's an orthopedic surgeon that's done several procedures for her, and she just loves him, let me tell you. He seems a great guy to me. I don't care what the data says. I will not convince my grandmother that he's a bad doctor or that he's overtreating. So I think the idea that a Medicare beneficiary, for example, is going to download the data and look and decide which physician they get to replace their hip, I just have real doubts that that's going to be the case.
Well, how about you? Have you looked up your grandmother or your mother's doctor?
I have not. Maybe I'll do that, or maybe I don't want to know. I'm not sure. But eventually I will pour through the data, but I haven't done it yet.
Well, but you say overall there is a sense that there is overtreatment, as you said. Otherwise, why would our healthcare spending be so high with the results not matching that? Is there possibly a way to use this information to show that to patients? I mean, everyone has an anecdote. We've all been sharing them today, and I have one I've actually shared with listeners of having my mom was sent to a hospital by her doctor, and while there, a resident literally hissed at us, what are you doing here? Get out. The idea was that she was at that point too old and too infirm for what this doctor wanted her to do. Well, is there a way that this research could perhaps be that warning to patients, that it could perhaps illustrate that a whole bunch of people were getting a certain treatment and it was having no effect?
Perhaps. The hard part is the having no effect part, because in Medicare claims, you don't measure quality outcomes, so we don't observe the quality side of it. What you're pointing out is a research difficulty. You need to join costs, but also, patient outcomes. So there's always going to be a piece of the pie missing from these data. I think we've got a culture that generally with healthcare assumes that more is better. I think there's ample evidence that is not the case. Perhaps this could be a small part of starting to demonstrate some of that, but it's only a small part of the puzzle.
On the other hand, taking away the doctors who are committing fraud, not treating anyone, putting in for Medicare payments, that may be discovered as well. But, the doctors that are treating a lot might say, look, my patient asked for it, and any attempt to use this research to reduce that kind of treatment, you run up against the people who say that's rationing.
Sure. And there's obviously a tension there. We and you can have individuals who will sort of give both sides of the coin. They'll say, oh, my goodness, Medicare spending is out of control. We have to do something or it's going to bankrupt the country. Then if we begin to bring about policies that might slow down some of that spending, as you say, then that will be very controversial. There really is a cultural assumption, I think, in our country that more is better in health care. And there's a lot of evidence that's not always the case, or at least it appears that way from researchers and policy types. But somehow we have got to communicate that to patients and let them sort of arrive at that conclusion themselves.
Well, just talk about one piece of research that you've done on hospice.
Sure. So I've done quite a bit of work that shows that hospice actually reduces Medicare spending. So if you take someone who dies in hospice as compared to someone who is similar but that did not, you know, saves about $2,400 per patient. The way the cost savings are primarily obtained is hospice really means most people end up dying in their home and don't actually spend time in the ICU in the last few weeks of life. I think in retrospect, many people looking back in the last month of, say, their mother's life after she has died often regret, you know, ICU experiences, and people that have used hospice often feel glad that they had avoided that. The key is figuring out how to communicate prognosis and options to patients prospectively, meaning as they're walking through this. And it's very tricky because you only have one mother, so you don't. It's not like you get to do this 100 times and
right.
get better at it.
You want to maybe try and keep them in the ICU, which is a very loud, often noisy
yes.
place for, you know, 20, 25 days. It costs a lot more. But it's not just that. It's the time that they might have spent in hospice, while also less expensive, less treatment, but also a gentler exit.
Yes, definitely. And hospice is an example of something that, you know, has a modest cost reduction, but actually improves, you know, quality of life of patients and the experience of loved ones. And there aren't very many examples of that in the healthcare system. In the Medicare program, currently about half the people who die use some hospice before death. So there's a need to try to educate patients so they can make better, you know, informed decisions.
Don Taylor, Associate Professor of Public Policy at Duke University, commenting on today's release of information on Medicare payments. Don, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.